providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. And as promised, we're now focusing on the energy sector as I'm chatting again with Joseph Schachter, founder and editor of the Schachter Energy Report. Joseph also writes the Eye on Energy Report, which is a free product covering the data around the oil and natural gas prices, where Joseph looks into some of the storage figures, the inventory numbers, production numbers, more on a broad sense. The Schachter Energy Report, that's where he dives into a lot of the energy companies and shares his thoughts on which ones are the best opportunities. Something we'll get into in the second segment here. Joseph, as we usually do when we start these calls, is provide an update on some of the data that is in either oil or natural gas. But I want to start even with a broader topic here, where oil has been relatively range-bound throughout this year. Started this year in the low 70s, ran up to about $87 and change in early April, and then corrected into the low 70s again. And right now is right around $80 a barrel. What is moving price in your eyes? Is it data? Is it OPEC? Is it something else? Is it economic numbers where we can actually look to something here and say, look, this potentially, whether it's data or OPEC or something else, could be the driver of a new trend, a breakout, either up or down for the oil price?
It's good to be with you again, Corey. The price of crude oil has moved around. In April, when there was concern about Iran and Israel going toe-to-toe, Hezbollah was attacking more. So the war premium expanded for about $10 from 77 in mid-March to 87.67, so just short of 88 in the middle of April. When Iran did not escalate after the initial firing of the drones and missiles that were knocked down by Israel and the United States and Britain and Jordan, which was interesting, the price of crude backed off to 72.48 in early June. And that was the decline because of rising U.S. inventories and weak China demand. So the issue then became of a tug of war between the war premium and the war concern, which would mean supply disruptions potentially, and the issue of day-to-day supply and demand, where the United States and China are showing weakness. And the United States consumes about 21 million barrels a day, China about 15 million barrels. So between the two of them, 36 million out of the 102 million barrels a day. And the U.S. consumption year to date is only up 0.2% from a year ago. But gasoline demand is down 1.4% from a year ago. And the reason is budgetary squeeze. So families are seeing their rent increase or their mortgage costs are going up, their insurance costs are going up, food costs are going up, doing things with their kids during the summer is going up. So the issue of a strong summer price increase because of greater utilization is where the bulls are. And that's why we rallied from $72.48 to about $82. I think that's gone too far. And I think that the data that we see in the next few weeks related to consumption, if we do not see that consumption pick up that the bulls are looking for, then we will retreat below 80. And I think we retreat even below the $72.48 that we saw in June, unless there's some spark on the war front, i.e., Israel and Lebanon go at it because of Hezbollah backed by Iran. If there's a war premium issue, then the weaker price does not occur. On the other hand, if things are quiet and Iran kind of says to Lebanon, don't do it yet for whatever reason, then the fundamentals of supply and demand will be the controllers of price. And we could see a peak below that 72.48, maybe even below US 70 a barrel. And to me, that would probably mean a very significant buying opportunity in the sector. We were, when we were up there at 308, when there was concern about Iran on the S&P TSX Energy Index, we're now sitting around 277. And the bullish percentage index when we were at the high was at 91%, the S&P energy sector bullish percentage. So very lofty, just like we're seeing with the AI world now, where the bullish consensus is unbelievable and probably excessive. We have fallen to 45.45% bullishness today, and I believe we're going to get below 10% bullishness if we back off some more on the price of crude, and that would then give us our next buying opportunity. So the three things I'm looking forward to say it's a strong buy, it's a cheap window, it's bargains again, is one, the price of crude below 70, WTI below 70. Second, the bullish percentage index below 10%. And third, the S&P TSX energy index below 240. So if we get one of those, we'll be bullish. If we get two or three, then we're going to be extremely bullish and we'll be adding quite a few more names to our SCR buy list.
So let's say the price does drop down there. That would be, again, potentially a breakdown below the $72 level from earlier, just about a month ago. But Joseph, we're well off of highs from 2022 and even 2023 when oil reached $95. Outside of escalating war tensions or maybe just a booming economy, which not a whole lot of people are predicting, have we seen some of the highs in oil? Are the mid-90s in terms of prices kind of off the table right now?
No, I think that the issue still remains. Do we want to make progress on the climate? Do we want to have more renewables? Do we want to have more EVs, which means more electricity, and how do you generate it? Not from coal, probably natural gas and small nuclear plants and, of course, solar panels, wind, all the things that people are working on. My view is that in 2025, we will be moving north of $90 on a consistent basis because the emerging world will show significant demand in crude to bring on more copper, more nickel, more lithium, all the things that we're going to need for the transition phase. And that means they're going to want a better quality of life. They're going to want to be able to drive cars. They're going to want electricity in their homes. They're going to want water in their homes. And so that's going to require a lot of infrastructure and usage of fossil fuels. So right now, the demand for 2024 is between 102 and 103 million barrels. Some are using 104 like OPEC, which I think they're way too optimistic based on what we know from China and the U.S. I think it's 102 in terms of millions of barrels a day on average for the year. During winter and summer, it could be 104. And then during the shoulder seasons, 98 million barrels to get to that 102 average. But I think that heading into the second half of 2025, we may even peak above $100 a barrel. And before this cycle is over, because of underinvestment in fossil fuels, be it oil, be it natural gas, and because of decline rates in the basins, especially the prolific Permian and the Montney and liquids-rich Montney and conventional oil is very high, 25, 35%. Some new wells in the Permian even are 60% decline rates, high quick payback, but you got to keep on drilling. It's a treadmill. So I think that heading into the end of the decade, we may see all-time highs above the 148 that we saw in summer of 2008. So I'm very bullish long-term. It's just the seasonality, inventory builds, near-term weakness in the U.S. economy and China economy that has me to be near-term cautious, but long-term extremely bullish.
Can supply side of the equation, can the U.S., can the OPEC plus countries fulfill some of this demand in the near term if we do see some of those demand spikes like you're predicting?
Yeah, the U.S., the Permian and the Eagle Ford still have growth potential for oil. And then you've got the natural gas basins, the Appalachia and others that can bring on more, the Haynesville. And in Canada, of course, the Montney, we have a big upside as we bring on more LNG plants on the west coast of Canada. LNG Canada starts up in early 2025, so 2.1 BCF moving west that now is going south and east on a 17 BCF base. So that's a nice growth rate, 2.1 on 17. So that's going to be positive. And then if other plants get approved, Pembina is moving forward with Cedar and the First Nations. Enbridge has a project. There's Rockies LNG that's with the producers and First Nations. So there's a lot of upside, potentially 6 to 8 BCF of export capacity on the West Coast before the end of this decade. on that 17 BCF base, that's very bullish for the natural gas sector longer term, even though right now there's a glut of natural gas and the price for AECO is under a dollar, which is horrible, and nobody can make money unless they hedge. And the U.S. natural gas is 280, and we need to see 350 there for the industry to want to spend more money.
Is natural gas going to 350? Because it's been a very nice run over the last couple months when natural gas was really stuck under $2. Now it's right around that $3 level. A nice move, but again, you go back in 2023 and it was around that level, if not higher many times, and well off of its highs from 2022. Is this run in natural gas sustainable?
The U.S. side is sustainable because there are plants that are under, LNG plants that are under maintenance. They're going to start up again. There's new plants coming on before the end of the year. So there will be more exports of LNG by the end of the year. That will require inventory that might go into storage to go to the LNG plants and then be exported. So the U.S. is separate from Canada because the demand is more near-term and storage levels week to week are not filling up as much as they were because of that demand increase on the export side. That over time will create a better environment for U.S. natural gas. Canadian natural gas, as I said, is sub a dollar. I think it was 85 cents in MCF Canadian, which is a horrible price. And we really need to get into Q4 when the coastal gas pipeline starts taking gas to fill and pressure test and then move that gas to the LNG Canada facility on the coast. And then they'll be doing all the testing and liquefying and all the stuff they need to build the inventory for the first shipments when they start up in 2025.
So many of the bulls for natural gas are pointing to these LNG plants, especially the new ones coming online. Joseph, how much could these raise price? Are some of these bullish outlooks too bullish in your eyes, or truly are these LNG plants going to change the pricing mechanism and lift natural gas prices sustainably?
Well, the industry needs a minimum of 250 Canadian to justify increasing gas drilling for dry gas. So you'd really need $3 Canadian. And if your cost is $1.25 to $1.50, that's a nice margin. If you have $2 costs, you really need $3. So the industry needs to have higher prices to get back to drilling to bring on more natural gas for these projects. If they need 6 to 8 BCF by the end of the decade, you got to incentivize them with price. So I'm optimistic for the long term. I think in 2025, we'll probably be looking at $2.53 for Canadian AECO once LNG Canada takes gas. And I think later in the decade, we'll see $4 to $6, depending upon how tight conditions are, weather related, et cetera. So I'm optimistic on the Canadian natural gas stocks. And you and I have talked about many of them over time. Some of them have been backing off here because of the market back off. As we said, we were at 308 on the index. Today, we're 277. And I think the index goes below 240. So we're seeing a little bit of a pullback in natural gas stocks. For example, Tourmaline today is down at over a dollar at 1.9%. And you've got others that are natural gas producers that are weakening as well because of the issue of natural gas pricing. If you're not properly hedged and you're seeing lower prices.
Let's talk about the stocks then, because look, these prices are not bad, especially on the oil side for the oil companies. Natural gas, hey, at least they're off their lows up in that $3 range in the US. But the energy stocks, well, they were on a pretty decent run up until April, really have just been matching the moves, at least when you're looking at XLE, of the oil price, up about 20% from when it started the year, and now down about 10% from the highs in April. What are you seeing in the energy stocks? Any areas, any pockets that are vastly undervalued in your eyes?
Well, if I'm right that we do see the price of crude back off and go below 70, the oily names probably have more downside than the natural gas, because the Canadian natural gas price, you know, where it is right now, has already beaten the stocks up. So if the oil stocks go down, they'll drag the natural gas stocks down. But if you have a chance to buy any of the high-quality natural gas names, Tourmaline, Paramount, the Crew Energy, NuVista, Pinecliff. We can go through more and more names that are trading cheap now, but could get cheaper. I would be looking at that. Stocks that are cheap right now are the energy service stocks, especially the frackers. So STEP and Trican, in my book, are very cheap here. And on any weakness, you want to be a buyer. So I think we're getting ready in sometime in the next month or two, if we have this fulfill the targets that I'm talking, we're going to have one of the greatest great buying opportunities. If you go back, the last great buying opportunity was in February of this year, and we got down at the time to 231 on the index before the rally to 308. If we come down below 240, that would be the next great buying opportunity since, as I said, early February of 2024.
Okay, so let's say, again, the oil price does pull back. You're looking at buying opportunities for companies. Do you stick with the big boys or do you filter down the food chain?
Most of these companies that are in the middle and the smaller size are trading around PDP, so proved, developed, producing reserves. So you also have 1P proven, which include the non-producing proven reserves, and then you have 2P, which is probable reserves. At the top of the market, companies trade at their 2P NAV. So going from PDP to 2P could be a 3-5 bagger over the cycle. That's why we're bullish on oil and natural gas, because we see significant upside between now and the end of the decade. And that's why we cover 38 companies. We cover some that are kind of more conservative, the pipeline infrastructure royalty, which are for older, people who need more income, focused on income rather than growth. And then we cover a lot of the E&P and service names that have the growth and exploration opportunities to grow significantly. And many of the companies in the natural gas side, knowing these LNG plants are coming on, have growth plans to bring on more pipelines, more compressors, more facilities, and drill up and drill to fill those facilities. So there's an optimism that between now and the end of the decade, it's going to grow. On the oil side, the TMX helps out to bring heavy oil to the West Coast. And of course, the demand will continue down into the U.S. Gulf Coast. But there's no real growth phase after TMX. So it's just going to be replacing decline rates. And of course, you don't really have decline rates in the oil sand, but on the SAGD you do, and in conventional E&P you do. So that's where you're going to see the growth, and that's where we're focused. Names like InPlay and Bonterra, we've talked about them in the past, which are normal drillers, Rubellite, they're going to be seeing Yangara, they're going to be seeing growth from the drill bit.
When you're looking at these growth companies then, what are the metrics you look at, first and foremost, in terms of current production, financial health on that front, and then the allocation of money that they are putting towards growth rather than returning to shareholders?
Well, you want that mix. So the first thing you want is a strong balance sheet. So you want the companies to have under debt to cash flow or debt to EBITDA under 1x, so that if there's a problem in the banking system, they don't pull the loans, which we saw in 2014, 2016, and we lost a number of companies that couldn't pay their bills and they went into bankruptcy. We don't want to see that. Second, we want large insider ownership. We want them thinking of as owners so that they want to see growth in the company so that they, of course, become wealthier from their shareholdings. So that's important. And then we want to see that they have a lot of inventory inventory that's booked, inventory that's not booked, so that there are significant growth opportunities over the next number of years so that they can meet the growth of the targets that they talk about if the commodity price rises sufficiently to incentivize them to increase their drill profile.
Do you see much growth coming from acquisitions, M&A activity for any of these mid-tier smaller companies outside of some of the major deals that we've seen?
Well, you're seeing a lot of companies focusing on the Montney and the Duvernay, and if they have non-core asset in Saskatchewan or West Fore in Alberta, you're seeing a number of companies put assets up for sale, and we've seen buyers come in who like southeastern and southwestern Saskatchewan, and deals are being done, and there's a lot of private companies where they're frustrated. The banks aren't supporting them, so they may be sellers. So I still believe there's M&A to be done. I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of M&A on the big side. I gather there's one big package out there right now. I'm not sure whose it is, but they could be at 200,000 BOEs a day. Once that is digested, then I don't see much on the big boys. I think it's one of the big American companies wanting to sell out. And so once that's digested, then we'll see how we move from there. I think that the packages that we'll be looking at will be in the 10 to 30,000 BOEs a day, or the small privates, which are under 5,000 BOEs a day. And so again, trading below PDP in many cases, proved developed producing. So the buyers can say, okay, do I have drilling opportunities to grow this production? Do they have facilities? What are their liabilities, and are they manageable, or have they taken good care of them? So there's a lot of things that the checklists have for companies to make the decision that they're going to go forward with M&A.
So what about the natural gas stocks? And it sounds like you are probably more focused on the natural gas stocks in the U.S. since they're getting a better price for their product outside of what the Canadian companies are getting.
Well, we only cover Canadian domestic companies from the point of view of the NI 5101, all the regulatory, all the reporting, the accounting. Also, being in Calgary, I have access to management, which is a very valuable thing to be able to be updated on a regular basis. The only Canadian company I cover that does work in the States is a company called Southern Energy, which is working in Mississippi. They have a number of wells that they drilled, but they haven't completed, and they need to see sustainable prices over US $3 an MCF. And we're right now in the 280, so we need to see a hot summer, air conditioning demand strong, the LNG demand pick up. And if we see sustainable prices in the threes, they will be able to increase their volume, significant increase in cash flow, and that would be a positive for them. Outside of that, the U.S. price goes up, and like if we get to $4 U.S., then a year from now, we might see $4 Canadian. So that's a good bump from today. But remember, the U.S., when you compare it to Canadian dollars, 1.38, the Canadian industry is not doing as well as the U.S. industry.
What about the mix, the companies with the mix of oil and natural gas production? Many of them do have this. How are you analyzing these companies? What mix do you like to see?
Again, I'd like to see a growth profile on the oil. If there's no growth profile on the oil, that's problematic. And on the natural gas side, you want to see significant growth, and that they've done hedging to their business during the low price environment windows. And so you got to go into the detail. You got to look at the quarterly reports. You got to listen to the presentations and the webcast. So it's a hands-on job. And so our subscribers want me to do that for them. And that's why we've successfully grown our subscriber base, is because we cover all the different groups between the conservative pipeline infrastructure royalty, large cap E&P, small, medium cap E&P, energy service, and then international Canadian companies working internationally. So we try to provide ideas in each of those groups to our subscribers. And then, of course, we in conjunction with that, we have our Catch the Energy conference that you've been at in October, this year, October 19th, at Mount Royal University in Calgary. We're 45 companies to present, 35 of them from my side. And the TMX, which is our major sponsor, brings 10 companies from the renewable world, critical minerals, clean tech. So if people are interested in the conventional industry of the energy industry of today and the energy industry of tomorrow, coming to that conference is something beneficial. And if you are a subscriber, you become a subscriber, we include two complimentary tickets. So that really is a significant added benefit to people to become subscribers.
Yeah, I've been to that conference many years, Joseph, and I really do appreciate just how efficient that conference is and the time you get with these management teams, as well as the presentation slots that are longer than most other conferences I've been to. Final question on the stocks then. When it comes to dividend, are there any companies out there that really have your eye that are paying a much higher dividend than the average of the market that you also think is sustainable?
That's really an issue where you've got to know that they have a strong balance sheet. They have the production that generates the cash flow, but some of them are pretty high, and if they need to have hedging to make things work for them. I'll just go through just some of the yields out there. For example, you've got Alvopetro, which is in Brazil with a 10.2% dividend yield. which is natural gas focused. Petrus, which is more natural gas, 9.1% yield. You've got companies like Whitecap that bought XTO, 7.3% yield. You've got Birchcliff with a 6.7% yield, which is a natural gas stock. So it really requires people to do their homework, decide what risk profile they want, how liquid they want the name to be. But I think that in the next few years, if the price of the commodity in both oil and natural gas go up, many of these companies will first repair the balance sheet. Then they'll be looking at return to shareholders. Some companies like to do more NCIB, like NuVista. Others like to do dividends and share buybacks. And others just prefer, because the ownership inside is very high, to pay dividends like a Pinecliff. So each one is different, and that's why the due diligence and the homework is important. And that's why we created the product that we have.
All right, Joseph, always great chatting with you. Thank you very much for your time. In the show notes, I will post that link to your conference, again, happening October 19th in Calgary. I'll be there again this year. And for all of you in the area or want to travel to Calgary to meet with a lot of these companies, I highly recommend it. Please email me if you're going to, and I am happy to walk around that conference with you on site and talk to some of the CEOs and management teams. Joseph, thank you very much for your time. Everyone, thanks for tuning into this weekend show. As always, please go back through the website, podcast, and YouTube page. Search the KE Report on social media. That's where you will find all of our content. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend. We'll be back with you full time next week. Joseph, again, thanks for your time today.
Super.